Welcome to the Analyst Podcast Series, practical advice to advancing your professional career from the experts. Analyst Podcast, moving at the speed of you. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello, everyone. This is an Analyst Podcast, moving at the speed of you. I'm Kenitha Butler, Senior Director of Recruiting at Analysts. I'm honored here to be today with Julie Gonachow, Recruiting Lead at Analyst, an ACS Solutions company.
Hey, Kenitha, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, Julie has over 20 years of recruiting experience, and we are very fortunate that she's been with us at Analyst for 16 of those years. She's here today to show us her knowledge on what the three biggest mistakes candidates make to keep them from landing that dream job.
Thanks, Kenitha. The first big mistake candidates make is with their resumes. And one thing you need to understand is resumes are your very first impression to any potential employer. So there are three things that I typically see. The first is with spelling and grammar, and that's pretty typical. So you want to make sure you do spell check and check your grammar. Have someone review your resume if you need to. That's always good to have second pair of eyes on it. Make sure that the tenses are correct. So in your current job, if you're working on something presently, you want to make sure that you're using present tense. If your past jobs, you've listed those on your resume, you want to make sure that they are in past tense so that, it's in the correct tense all the way through.
I've also seen managers, reject resumes just because they didn't spell like the names of the tools that they work on in an everyday environment. If they misspell those, that's a really big zing on them.
Right. They need to go through and make sure that they've listed, the right tools, the way that they're supposed to be spelled. A lot of times I'll go out and, do a Google search just to make sure a candidate's listed the proper spelling on some of the technology. So they need to do that, for sure. The other thing is not providing enough detail. It seems like a lot of candidates are coming out of college and, whoever is kind of assisting them with the resume tells them it should be one page long. And, that with somebody that doesn't have a lot of work experience, that's probably true. But when you have work experience, you can have a resume that's 2 to 3 pages. If you need to, take that many pages to be able to adequately explain what you've done in your job. So you want enough detail. And then you also want to tailor it to the role that you're applying to so that it aligns to the job posting. Applicant tracking systems scan resumes for keywords from job descriptions. And so you want to make sure your resume includes detail about those key technologies wherever you've worked with them and not just in the summary. And we see that a lot. They'll put it in the summary. They won't put it through the body of the resume. So you can't tell that they've actually worked with it. The next thing would be consistent formatting. And again, this is common sense stuff, but making sure bullets are aligned and that the font is easy to read. And then also it's important to provide a link to your LinkedIn profile if you have one, at the top of your resume, maybe right underneath your name.
I've seen a lot of people, do that and miss out on some of those details. And, just to point out on LinkedIn profile, just making sure that it's, very professional, that it's got a great picture on there. It doesn't have to be a regular headshot, but just, something that's going to be professional, that's going to show them shine. And I also think it'd be a good idea to have someone go over the resume, just to identify something you can't see. For me, I've even done invitations and sent them out and mailed and then realized after the fact that I misspelled one word and it seems to have just dampened, the whole message of the invite. So what I'm also hearing you say, if I'm correct, is that you like to tailor the resume per the job posting, meaning they have all the same experience, but making sure that they may be going a little bit deeper on some of the skills that's being requested on the requisition. Is that what you're saying? I mean, that we can actually have like different and unique resumes as long as it's the experience that we really have?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a role that maybe the job description's leans a little bit heavier towards front end development. And you've done full stack development. You might want to make sure that that your job responsibilities kind of lean a little heavier on the front end side. Whereas if if it's a full stack developer, you want to make sure that you've listed the responsibilities that you had that cover the whole spectrum of development from front to back end, just as an example.
Right. And really anything that you put on your resume is up for shot because they can ask you any question about it and really need to be able to speak 2 or 3 layers into whatever those skills are. So not just putting that you've been in that environment, that you've actually worked hands-on with it and how they worked with it. Is that right?
Absolutely. Right. If it's on your resume, you need to be able to speak to it, and you need to be able to do so in depth for sure.
Exactly. So what would that second mistake be, Julie?
Second mistake would be making sure key information on the LinkedIn profile matches your resume exactly. And by that, you know, because I know there are going to be some differences, but what I'm referring to are titles, the name of the company, dates of employment. That one seems to be kind of a sticking point sometimes. And then educational details, because, you know, we submit a resume with a LinkedIn profile at the top. Clients will check out that candidate's profile. And we've actually had candidates rejected because their LinkedIn profile didn't match their resume, especially when it comes to those kind of critical details, not necessarily the job or the work history, as far as their responsibilities. Those can look a little different, but titles, companies, dates of employment, and educational details, those need to be the same.
You know, you're right. You know, managers will check out those details, but they'll also cross-reference if you have any social media. So never put anything on social media that you wouldn't want a hiring manager to see.
Good point.
And not only, you know, I see people that, you know, maybe they're in a picture, and some of the people that are in the picture may be doing something that's questionable, and they're not, but they're still going to be associated with, you know, that kind of behavior. So it's always best. If grandma didn't need to see it, then it doesn't need to be out there, is what my mom always told me.
That's exactly right.
Right, exactly. So consistency is key. You know, I see a lot of people, you know, thinking that their resume is enough, and they barely pay any attention to what aligns with their LinkedIn or their social media or, you know, anything else that they have on the internet. So I'm right in line with you on that. What would be your third piece of advice?
The third mistake is candidates often apply to multiple jobs at the same company that they are not qualified for. And we call this blanketing. And I'm not referring to jobs that are very similar, because it's that's certainly okay. But I'm talking about applying to, you know, if you're a developer, applying to an administrative job and a help desk job and a project manager role, you know, jobs that are not specific to your particular experience.
I got it. So what if the candidate thinks that they might be a fit for more than one job position? Would it be okay to submit to two applications or maybe just to one? What would the limit be that would be acceptable?
You know, it's perfectly fine to apply to more than one position if the candidate is, say, 80% to 100% qualified for those roles, although I'd probably limit it to two or three at the most, so that the candidate doesn't seem to be unsure of the job that they actually want. So I've seen candidates actually apply for 5 to 10 jobs or more, and most of them are completely unrelated to their experience, and they're only qualified for maybe one or two of them. So it's frustrating for me as a recruiter. It can be frustrating for an employer because it wastes your time. You go out there and you take a look and you're like, they've applied to a developer, which they're qualified for, but then they have also applied to an administrative assistant and a help desk technician. And that's actually what I see all the time. So you want to make sure that if you're applying for positions that you are qualified, and I'd probably keep it to two or three.
Got it. So now that we've identified the three biggest mistakes candidates make while applying for a job, what can candidates do once they've been selected for that all important interview to land it? I mean, is there a way to make sure they can ensure that it's a successful interview? What would be your recommendation on that?
Absolutely. The first tip is to prepare. I mean, prepare for the interview instead of just winging it. You don't want to rely on spontaneous answers, because spontaneous answers are often run on and confusing to follow. I would, you know, sit down and carefully think out answers ahead of time, you know, kind of take a look at the job description and look at your experience and formulate answers to some questions that you think that you're going to get from that potential employer. And then have specific examples. You know, when you come up with these prepared answers, you want specific examples to give them, and then keep your answers to around 60 seconds if possible. And that holds the interviewer's attention that way.
I totally agree with you on that. So after all, you are interviewing for a position. You should always be prepared and demonstrate that you're qualified for the job. If you wing it, it kind of makes you look like that you just have, you like the proper skills that are required, and it's not the best first impression that you should make on an interview. What other tips could you give us about preparing for the interview that you could share for us?
The first thing would be to research the company. You want to go out and, you know, locate their website, review their mission statement and their values, gather some information about what the company does, the locations, you know, that kind of thing. Have an idea of the company before you go into the interview.
Well, researching definitely takes time, but it always pays off. You'd be surprised at how many people don't do their homework before an interview. I mean, I've literally heard candidates being asked what they know about the opportunity, and they have absolutely no clue about what the company did or what the job's about. And I don't recall any of them getting hired. So I hope our listeners are taking notes on this. And Julie, besides researching the company, what else could you recommend for us?
I would recommend looking up the interviewer or hiring manager that they're speaking with on LinkedIn ahead of time. You want to know who you're speaking with, and this gives you a chance to find possibly some common ground. Maybe you both belong to a group, or there are some interests that they have or that are the interests of yours as well. And this way you can kind of mention it at some point if you have the opportunity.
Do you think it would be considered invasive by the interviewer on that? I mean, do managers think favorably when candidates review their LinkedIn profile during the process? Because I can tell when someone's reviewed my profile. I'm sure they can too.
I don't think that reviewing the interviewer's profile is invasive at all. It's actually doing your homework and preparing for the interviews, you know, similar to looking up the company. So I would, you know, go out and take a look. Sometimes just finding common ground, like belonging to the same professional group, or maybe they've attended the same college or have worked at the same company or have a connection in common. Sometimes that's a nice conversation starter. I just wouldn't connect with them on LinkedIn at this point. That's something that you could do, you know, after you get the job or get the job offer.
That's very interesting. What about your recommendations on punctuality?
Punctuality, you know, for an interview is critical. So I would arrive a few minutes early for either a video or an on-site interview. If it is a video call, which a lot of our interviews are right now, I would join about 5 minutes early so that you're on and waiting when the manager joins. And then if it's an on-site interview, I tell my candidates to arrive 15 minutes early. I wouldn't arrive any earlier than that because that could get kind of awkward, but I'd say 15 minutes, and that gives you enough time to find parking, check in with the receptionist, et cetera. And then you're there waiting and ready when the interviewer comes to get you.
You know, I've always heard that being exactly on time is you're actually late. Why do you think it's so important to be there a little bit early?
Being early to the interview is a reflection on how you'll perform on the job in the company's mind. So if you're early to the interview, it tells the employer that you value the role and their time. And if you're late, it gives just the opposite message. So it puts, you know, doubt in the hiring manager's head that you're not going to be a punctual employee, and it will nearly always result in not getting the offer.
Got it. So what advice would you have about engaging to show that you're interested in the position and interested in also what the interview has to say or ask you?
A big thing would be just maintaining eye contact during the interview. And this is true, again, for both video and on-site. Obviously, when you're on-site, you're in front of the manager. So it's important to, you know, keep your eyes locked, you know, not from a creepy perspective, but, you know, you want to maintain good eye contact. You want to smile, be engaging. When you're on a video interview, eye contact's still critical. You know, I've had people actually have the interview on one monitor and their camera is on another. And so it looks like they're looking off to the side for the entire interview. So use your main laptop, look into your camera, and that gives the impression that you're looking into the eyes of that interviewer. And again, smile, be engaging. Another thing is to listen carefully to the entire questions before you formulate an answer.
You know, that's great advice, especially right now when there's been so many interviews and even, you know, work right now is remote. What about the background? I hear a lot of stories about what's in people's backgrounds when they're interviewing. It's quite surprising. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we've had situations where we've had candidates that look like they were interviewing from within their closet, and that's no joke. They had clothes in on a rack behind them. I've had a bright window behind one guy so that he basically couldn't see his face because of the light behind him. I've had a bright light in front of somebody that made it look like they were being interrogated. So, you know, this is one of those things that you want to kind of test it out. A good recruiter will test that out with their candidate ahead of time and make sure that, you know, the background behind them isn't, you know, distracting. It's blank walls probably always best, or maybe one picture that's, you know, not too crazy behind them, and that the lighting is good. So those are pretty critical for video interviews.
Yeah. Right. And also dressing as if you were in person, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. For both interviews, you should. So even for a phone interview or sorry, a video interview, I tell my candidates to dress just as they would as if they were going to an on-site. And we actually have one client that will ask our candidates to stand up to prove that they have dressed appropriately for the interview. And so because they've, I guess, had a few instances where they did that and the person was wearing pajama pants or sweatpants or something. I don't know. But so from that point on, we've started telling all of our candidates to make sure that they're dressed from head to toe like they would be if they were going for an on-site interview. And that eliminates that risk, I guess. So
that's funny because, you know, most of these days we're wearing shorts or sweatpants. And I'm sure that, you know, tops and blouses, you know, the industry out there has caused the sales to really skyrocket in that, but there's not that many people buying pants and stuff anymore. So on interviews, we definitely have to wear the correct outfit all the way down.
Right. Absolutely.
So other than that, what other kind of questions could draw your attention away from candidates?
Asking comfort related questions, especially, you know, at the initial interview stage, like asking about a work schedule or taking time off, you know, those kinds of things. Anything that might lead the potential employer to believe that you may have an issue with putting in the time it takes to get the job done, those are things you don't want to bring up right away. And also, unless the client mentions salary first, I would not suggest asking about pay or benefits at this stage. That's something you could do later on.
Well, there you have it. The top three mistakes candidates do. Number one is incomplete and untailored resumes. Two is lack of consistency in their resumes and online profiles. Three is applying for jobs in the same company that they are not qualified for. Now, Julie, thank you so much for being here with us. Could you give us a preview on what our next podcast will be about?
Absolutely. Our next podcast will be around developing your personal brand. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Julie. We truly appreciate your insight. See you next time, folks. Stay tuned for our next Analyst podcast, Moving at the Speed of You.
Go further with Analyst. Thank you for tuning in to the Analyst Podcast, professional advice to advance your career. For more information, visit our resource candidate library at analyst.com. Analyst Podcast, moving at the speed of you.